5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, ignition, liftoff.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, Director of Content for WorkinSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports Podcast. The Silicon Valley is a pretty well-known technology hub in California. Maybe you've heard of it. Any of these companies sound familiar? Google, Adobe, Apple, Facebook, Cisco, Oracle, Netflix, PayPal, Yahoo? They and hundreds more tech companies all reside in the southern San Francisco Bay Area. The region has become identified for their tech personality and their expensive real estate. The average sale price of a home sold is about $1.4 million. That is nuts. No thank you. That right there is enough to tell me, not interested, I don't want to start a career in tech and be forced to live in an area that will put me in debt for the next two generations. But let's put that same lens on the sports industry. Is there a region that you think of when you think of sports? With teams spread out across the nation, it's kind of hard to pinpoint an area that is synonymous to the sports industry. Most leagues and major organizations have corporate headquarters in New York, and there's a lot of teams there, so they may have the best argument, but I'm going to go in a different direction with this discussion. Just up the coastline from the Silicon Valley is what could be called the sporting goods forest. I just made that up. Portland, Oregon, home to Nike, Adidas, Under Armour, Columbia Sportswear, Keen Footwear, and many other sports lifestyle brands. The Northwest has become the hub for a very large segment of the sports industry. Walk down the street on a weekend or go to a high school or a college campus and look around. How often do you see Nike, Under Armour, or Adidas gear? Pretty often, right? Nike made $32 billion in sales revenue in 2016. Adidas, $14 billion. Under Armour, $4.3 billion. I mean, Nike's the supreme leader, but the other two are in the billions, so don't shed a tear. The point is, if you want to work in sports product marketing, branding, design, digital marketing, public relations, media relations, and a host of other big business sports jobs, the Portland area may be that hub that it's worth migrating towards. Oh, and the extra good news, the average price of a home in Portland is $430,000, much more affordable. All this brings us to today's guest, Carl Keating, brand lead for the House of Hoops Nike joint retail venture with Foot Locker. Now, Carl has worked in Portland for both Adidas and Nike on the product marketing side, two of the big boys. But his experience isn't limited to just Portland or even just the US. Carl has ventured abroad to work in Germany and the Netherlands, adding international marketing experience to his portfolio. He's a wealth of information, so let's get to it already. Here's Carl Keating. Hey, Carl, how's it going today?
Great, Brian. Glad to be on.
So I know you're a big soccer fan. Have you been enjoying the World Cup so far?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for me, it takes me back like to being a kid again because, you know, 1994, I got to go with my dad down to Orlando and watch Ireland-Mexico play in about 110-degree heat.
Nice.
And, yeah, I mean, I think for anyone who works in sports or entertainment or this field, anytime, you know, an NBA Finals or Masters comes on, and for me it's the World Cup, it just really takes you back to the love of the sport and being a kid, and, you know, it gets me giddy. And, you know, the experience watching it now is just so much better than it used to be, being able to have multiple channels and the viewer experience is fantastic.
It's really true. So I want to learn a lot more about your career. Let's start with the basics. Tell us a little bit more about your journey to end up in the sports marketing side on the global stage. And specifically, why did you enter the world of sports apparel and lifestyle brands like Adidas and Nike? What led to that decision making for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, taking it back a bit, I mean, I always had an interest in global sports because I think it was partially, you know, out of my control just growing up in Canada, in Toronto, where I was from. It was a bit of a hybrid, in a way, between the U.S. and Europe in terms of the sports that we got. You know, there was always tons of English soccer on TV, and my parents were Irish, so I was really lucky enough to make some trips over to Europe and kind of fall in love with, you know, a lot of the European sports. And then, naturally, growing up in Toronto, huge fans of NFL and NBA. And so I've always had this hybrid interest between the two continents. And yeah, I mean, you talk about as if it had been an interest right out of the gate to get into the product side of the world when it couldn't really be further from the truth, because I actually applied to university in geophysics, of all things.
Oh, my.
And probably would have been the worst seismologist of all time. But I had heard only about the fact that you could have a career in business through a friend of a friend who had done his sports marketing degree at UMass. And that's when the light kind of clicked on in my head. And I was in the middle of university, and I said, this is where I need to be. I didn't even know that you could have that career path. And so I looked at the Warsaw Sports Marketing Program, which at the time, just about over 10 years ago, was the leader, still is the leader in terms of sports MBAs. And it was the only school I applied to. They were the very first sports MBA. You know, since then, a lot of other programs have come online, and I had never been to Oregon and made my way out there. And there's a whole path beyond that, but I was always interested in getting to Europe, and really only fell into kind of the Adidas and Nike world through some projects that I'd worked on and some connections. And happy to talk more about that. But yeah, it's not like I was a huge sneakerhead or anything like that.
Right. Well, I think it's interesting. You said you got your MBA from University of Oregon, and I think most people are starting to recognize that region, that Portland, Oregon region with Nike and Adidas and Columbia and Keen and many other brands there, like that's almost become like a Silicon Valley of the sports world, you know, right? It's like a really regional focus on that sports apparel and lifestyle brands. How much did it help you getting your MBA right in the backyard there?
Well, it helped massively because we had the benefit of being able to do project work with Nike and Adidas. And like you said, since then, Under Armour and Li Ning have come in. And, you know, it's like any kind of sector of business. It's become a hotbed because everyone feeds off each other. There's a talent pool, you know, that Nike had grown naturally and that other brands were able to come in and tap into. But also other brands knew that sales reps and agencies and people from around the world were coming to Beaverton and Portland to obviously meet up with Nike. So it only made sense to piggyback. And that's why you've seen all of them sprout up. But yeah, I did a project with Audi in my internship in 2006. And then that's what led to me having the conversation of working with them over in Germany that summer, which also coincidentally happened to be a World Cup. Everything seems to come back in cycles of World Cups for me.
Nice.
But and then I was really hoping to stay over in Europe, but the opportunity to kind of start up and work on their U.S. sports business when Audi was really first getting into baseball and football in the 2007-2008 period was too good to pass up for me.
For sure. So a lot of people, I think, are they struggle to turn an internship opportunity into a full-time job opportunity. So you said you interned over in Germany, and then you end up getting a full-time job. What do you think it was about your internship that helped lay the groundwork for you to become a full-time employee?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, I've worked with a number of internships, kind of through my career. And I think the couple things that I would point out is, you know, I had the benefit of doing my internship and then having a period of a year in between then to really formalize relationships and have so many informative exploratory chats. And I think that's really the first port of call. And I know I've listened to a few of your pods before, and you guys talk about, you know, if you don't have connections, how do you get in? But it's people love talking about themselves, let's be honest.
Oh yeah.
And the higher up you go in organizations, VPs, et cetera, they probably love even talking about themselves even more. And so there's always opportunities to have these exploratory chats. And then it was really after that, it's keeping in touch. So I had a number of people at Audi that I had never met, but I had been referred to and just kind of kept up those chats, talked to them about the business. I knew nothing about the product world from, you know, the merchandising sales aspect. I really kind of came in from an agency side and the marketing angle. But I think a key point is not just having a one and done chat. And a lot of interns and people that I've, you know, been happy to talk to, it ends up being kind of an unfulfilling one and done chat. And I think the ones that really make fruitful relationships are those that, are able to hit you up a second, third, fourth time, and not always with questions, but with, you know, sharing articles or, you know, seeing something in the news that I was, you know, or the brand was working on and just sharing kind of some congrats or praise. or thinking of something that might be of interest to me, because no matter what job you're in, there's always, you know, other folks out there who can take notice and contribute some insight. And I think that's what I used really to my benefit in that last kind of 6 months, was kind of keeping those relationships up while we were in school and doing project work.
I love that. I love taking the idea of taking an active role in any kind of networking or internship experience to keep that relationship going. I mean, you're right. It's not this passive thing where it just happens once and that's, you know, it's formulated. You have to work at it. And it sounds like you did. You know, I read through your bio and I see creative activations all over the place. At Adidas, you were in charge of engaging and exciting the high school consumer. At Nike, you led the brand execution for Nike Golf in Europe and then the House of Hoops. From a marketing perspective, how do you personally stimulate creativity? I mean, does it all come natural to you, or do you have a process that helps you become creatively open?
Well, I think, yeah, it's evolved definitely from, you know, when I was younger, I definitely think I was more creatively inclined and, you know, always had an interest in, you know, the absurd or just producing. I think if you're in marketing, you love creation. You love seeing things come to life, whether it's, you know, an ad or an activation or an event. So it's kind of, there is probably something born into you, but I think a lot of it as I've gone on in my career that I've realized is as you become a manager, it's about taking the walls down for your team and making them okay to, you know, to fail and to think of, you know, something that isn't going to be stamped on them if it doesn't go the right way. And it's, I think a lot of creativity is about kind of drawing that inspiration to not be fearful in what you do. And it's interesting as business and marketing has evolved so much now, it's so digital, it's so of the moment, it's so in and out and gone. And I think the ability to test and try new things is something that I've always tried to bring into our team and our work. And I think, you know, a good example of that is when I moved on to our Jordan business, we were actually faced with a huge challenge because we were supposed to launch the Jordan 31. And then like it is in any business, you know, stuff comes out of the blue and the shoe launch moved out 3 months. So we had to scramble within a couple weeks and months of, you know, the huge holiday period to figure out a game plan. And we came up with this idea to celebrate the full 30 years of Jordan. So what we took was going from one shoe launch to celebrating all 30 years and being able to bring in, you know, people outside of our brand to talk about their love of Jordan and sneakers in a way that we wouldn't have been able to do, you know, as authentically necessarily just from us as a brand. And so we took an opportunity and spun it into something completely fresh and new.
That is really cool. So how would you explain your kind of day-to-day role or responsibilities as the brand lead of House of Hoops? It sounds like such a broad job. I mean, you were based in the Netherlands, correct? And tell me a little bit more. Tell me a little bit more about like your day-to-day. What did it kind of consist of to be that brand lead for such a major initiative within Nike?
Yeah, so at a company like Nike, it's a matrix organization. So, and it's very similar to Adidas in that you, no matter what role you're in, you typically have dual reporting lines. So within my most recent role, I was very closely linked in with the sales org and, you know, our big partners like Foot Locker, who will do $1 billion in business with Nike and Foot Locker in a quarter.
Wow.
To show you kind of the scale that they have, right? And so you're very much, thinking consumer first, not only Nike's consumer, but Foot Locker's consumer. So you're really kind of striding and the balance of working with the account, Foot Locker, who have a huge point of view, working with our sales team, who are very product oriented, looking at kind of the life cycles and the key commercial items, and then working back with the categories. So at Nike, you know, there's 10 categories, just like Adidas in a lot of ways, you know, the big sports, football, basketball, running, lifestyle. And so each one of those have sub consumers. And so depending on the campaign you're running, you're really trying to fit the pieces of the puzzle together. And with our brand hat on, you know, fighting for, you know, the most impactful, creative, and, and really kind of innovative communication plans that you can come up with. And those can be multi-channel now, obviously through e-com, through social, through events, through in-store activations. It really has become, you know, it's a bit of a buzzword, but omni-channel. And that's what I love about it, is the piecing of the puzzle, putting it all together, working with the athletes, and even more and more now, looking at the broader spectrum of influence, which is moving into celebrity and sneakerheads and people that can provide influence and talk passionately about your product.
There's so many different touch points. I mean, there's it's got to be just like, I don't know, in a way mind-boggling of so many different avenues. It really, I mean, as you list through it all, it's like everything you say makes complete sense, and yet you think of it and it's like enormous. I mean, there's so many different ways to reach the customer and communicate with different segments. And how much of your time is spent in kind of the research and data mining side of things versus the creative activation side of things?
Yeah. No, it's a great call. I'll be completely blunt with you. I would love to be spending more time in the research and data analytics side than we are. I think naturally, the more that our communications and, to be honest, business results that move into the e-com and online and digital and social world, the more obviously you're able to not only look reactively at how things have performed and really get granular, but also try and get proactive into predictive, right, you know, habits, and really that journey and thinking of the full touch points from, okay, a kid, you know, discovers a shoe or, you know, a cleat, you know, like in the World Cup right now, right?
Yep.
A kid might not be following Nike, but they might be following Brazil or Neymar or just really tuning into the World Cup for the first time. So what is their journey? They're seeing something on pitch. They're researching in it, you know, potentially through Instagram. What's popping up? What can we work back with and try and even work with partners to gain kind of some analytics on, you know, those touch points? And it's a daunting world. It changes every day. It's
right.
Something that I would love to get more and more involved in, because you can be overcome with data. But I think the key is trying to distill out, you know, what are those touch points that really help move the consumer along and inspire them to the next stage to kind of ultimately get closer and closer to a conversion?
Yeah, it's so interesting too, because it's such an active environment. And I don't just mean like physically active, but all of your celebrity endorsements and athlete endorsements are out there constantly just representing the brand and attaching themselves, yeah, to an audience. And then you guys trying to turn that audience into action. It's just like, there's so many levels to it. It's fascinating. Let's talk. I'm fascinated somewhat too by the corporate culture side of things. Yeah. How does corporate culture change from business to business, like from Adidas to Nike? I mean, those are two huge organizations, multi-billion-dollar companies. Are there a lot of similarities in the way they operate, or is it completely different culturally?
Well, I would say, I mean, there's way more similarities than differences at the end of the day, because they're two huge global, you know, ultimately product brands.
Right.
You know, I get this question a lot, and I love answering it, because I think it is valuable to have worked for both companies. There's perspectives and differences from both of them. So the way I distill it down is, when I left Audi in 2011, they were much more of a, you know, product innovation led company, of which brand marketing was a piece that was attached onto it. And now keep in mind, they're a German-led company. And since I've left, they've moved a ton of their global decision-making into Portland, because they knew they had to get much closer to the U.S. consumer, be more relevant. So I think they've really kind of started to flip the tables from more the product-led teams to the brand teams, which I think is a smart move. When I moved over to Nike, the first thing I noticed is that, like, wow, this is a brand-led company in a lot of ways.
Okay.
Product is still first, you know, 1A and 1B. And innovation on both sides, from communication to product, but at the seat of the table, the brand voice and the brand ownership really kind of sung. But I do think, you know, Adidas is, having watched from afar and having some friends still there, they've done an amazing job the last few years of really crafting their brand and being much more relevant. And, you know, when it comes to culture, I think so much of it is organic versus orchestrated. And I think big companies, are trying to figure that out, you know, trying to find moments to galvanize teams. And luckily we work in sport, right? So there's moments like World Cup to,
right,
to get the goosebumps up on your arms and kind of bring teams together. And the last thing I'll say is working in Europe on the diversity side is something I would recommend to any one of your listeners, not just Europe, but if you have the opportunity to go abroad, working with diversity, working with other cultures, working with the Southern Europeans who are, you know, passionate to say the least, and working with, you know, Scandinavians and Dutch, everyone brings kind of a different flavor just to the business environment.
I think that's fascinating. I wanted to talk more about the global experience you have going from Canada to Portland and then to Europe. What were the major differences? So you're obviously saying that there's a diversity in culture that you're being surrounded with, but are the consumers completely different too? Or is the language of sports kind of similar across kind of borders? How was that experience for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, the last team that I worked on with Nike, you know, we had 40 people on our broader team, and of the 40, they came from 26 different countries.
Wow, cool.
Just on our team alone. So, you know, you have language barriers, and English is kind of the second language for everybody. But the consumer is a really interesting one. You know, I was really lucky to work across Europe. So, I would say the big difference from the U.S., while sport is at the center of everything, the passion points within fashion, the passion, you know, a good example is sneaker culture is very different over there. Like in the U.S., basketball is a cultural hot point, and sneaker culture kind of really comes out of basketball in a lot of ways, whereas yeah. In London and Paris, it's very much, you know, the running silhouettes, you know, it's the street fashion. And you get kids who enter into the sport world, sometimes through the fashion world or through, you know, icons that they're seeing kind of their, you know, favorite DJ wear, for example. So I think at the end of the day, a 16, 17 year old kid, is much more in tune globally than when I grew up. You know, The World is Flat. That's a great book for anyone who should read it, but it's almost 10 years old now. And there's probably more red threads nowadays with a 16-year-old kid who's growing up in China, the U.S., or Europe, because they're able to watch games on YouTube, they're able to play the same FIFA game.
Right.
And so I think it's often finding those commonalities while also having the ability to still tailor to, you know, a kid in Paris or a kid in Milan, which isn't always an easy balance to strive.
I'm sure. Yeah. I've noticed too on your resume that you've led, I mean, major global marketing initiatives in multiple sports and disciplines, in golf, basketball, the Olympics, running, World Cup. How important is versatility and the ability to do the job no matter what the sport? I think a lot of people go into their concept of their sports career and think, I want to work in X sport. And yet you've kind of proven that you have to have a more broad ability, right?
Yep. Yeah, I think having that, you know, it's the classic, you know, specialist versus generalist, and any organization will have healthy doses of both specialists and generalists, and I think they provide value to both. You know, a good example is like on our Nike running team, you have everyone on a team there from marathoners, Olympic athletes who are in marketing, who obsess the shoe, the sport, you know, on the highest performance level. And then I think it's really important to bring in folks who have worked in soccer or worked in, you know, sportswear and lifestyle, because they understand that, you know, maybe only 8% of runners are quote unquote hardcore runners. And then it makes the conversations just that much more fascinating. And I think team diversity, having those specialists and generalists, who can then, empathize with another point of view and collaborate. Because I think where the, a good, you know, solve for running is figuring out how do you bring more people into the sport, and how do you bring in folks who maybe have played another sport but have never thought about running, or are now 35 and have two kids you know, are looking for a way to get exercise. And there's many different entry points into a sport. You know, one of the things I love about Nike is we have a tenet that is, if you have a body, you're an athlete, right?
Like
it's not just you know, a NCAA or professional athlete who's considered an athlete. And so I think that's where I've generally landed more in the generalist phase.
Yeah.
Because I love kind of wearing multiple hats and moving from digital to brick and mortar through different sports. And I just, as a fan of sport, I have a massive cross section. So I love working on them all.
So are you that 35-year-old with two kids who wants to go running more often? Is that you?
Yeah, was that part a little bit too close to home? Yeah,
no, that's
definitely. Although I know for myself, I need to be chasing a ball around. I'm horrible at getting out and running around the block. I need to either have score that's kept or some sort of tennis, squash, soccer ball to be chased after to motivate myself.
I totally agree.
You definitely pick your moments when you have two kids.
I am the same way. I could go play soccer for hours because you don't think of it as running. And yet as soon as you tell me to go run like 2 miles by myself, I'm like, it's like the most it's like the most painful experience in the world.
I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm stealing this right from one of your recommendations on LinkedIn. A former coworker wrote of you, quote, "Carl's calm and approachable nature and willingness to make decisions make him the guy you want on your team." Let's unpack that a little bit. We've all worked with really smart people who are often unable to make decisions in the moment or commit to a direction. How important is being decisive and willing to make informed decisions as a function of your job and your career growth?
Yeah, it's massively important. And I think it's something I've really had to grow into, I'll be honest. And I'd like to think of it as a work in progress, especially the calm part. It's nice to hear that. but I think it is something that just comes with experience. You realize as you get older, you know, you can learn more from being wrong in a situation, and that being wrong at the end of the day, like I said, especially in this digital world, a tweet, a post, even a 6-week campaign isn't going to make or break you. And so I've really tried to instill, more decisive decision making in my area and then with our team, because I think, you know, being uncomfortable is actually a great thing in marketing. If you're too comfortable, and I learned this really early on from my agency days, that anytime we did a research group, you know what a research group of 100 people will do? Well, it'll get rid of the worst ad you were making, but it'll also get rid of the best ad because it's probably polarizing and people hate it or don't understand it.
Yep.
And what's great about working for a Nike or for Adidas is that our brand leaders are always pushing us to be uncomfortable. And with that comes making a decision around something where you have imperfect information. I think it's something that, you know, you might not have at 22 years old or 32 years old, but if you can kind of keep that in the back of your head, and it goes for personal choices too, you know, taking that job, moving abroad. We had never been to Amsterdam when we moved there. So you can only gather as much information then just kind of forge ahead and make the call.
I love that. So the same coworkers, I mean, you referenced it. They said that you were calm and approachable, which leans into a question that came from one of our fans of the show, Kadeem Pilgrim. We have a private Facebook group, and before every interview, I ask that group. There's like 500 people in there. I ask them, like, what questions do you want me to ask Carl? And he wanted to know if you were a mentor to people, and how do you help develop young people coming up in the marketing world? What's your approach in helping others grow?
Yeah, I think mentorship is something that is massively undervalued or underrated in a lot of ways, I'll put it. And it's something that I've always strived to have. But as I've progressed, I think, like I mentioned earlier, number of interns that have come through under my watch, even staying closely connected with the Warsaw Oregon Sports MBA, I often have first and second years. And I always tell the directors there, you know, I'm more than happy to have them reach out to me. I think some of the advice I give, just to stay consistent with earlier, is I think make sure that you're taking roles that also tell you what you might not like as much as you do like. And I think in the world of sport, there's a great value in finding out, sponsorship isn't my bag. I don't want to work for an agency. But you would never have known that if you hadn't worked for that agency or worked for that sponsor. You know, I learned very early on that I need to be working for a sports brand that's endemic to sport, not, you know, nothing against the Visas of the world, but, you know, they are latching on to kind of the passion of sport. And I learned very early on that I need to be someone who's working endemic to the sport itself. And I'd say the last bit of advice I give are two pieces. One, try and work in digital in some form and capacity coming right out of the gate. It's only going to accelerate. Often, I mean, this 22, 20-year-old kid that might be listeners, you know, they grew up in that world. You know, I'm 38, but they grew up in that world far more than I did, and it's only going to accelerate. No matter what you work in sport, even outside of sport, digital will be pretty much at the core. So try and find experience in that. And the last piece to that is a bit that I stole from Guy Kawasaki, who, if you haven't heard, speak, YouTube him and his innovation speech. But he talked about niche yourself. And he really talks about that in companies, right? Trying to find a very specific spot. But I think it's an amazing piece of advice for individuals, because growing up today, you can be a fan of statistics and, you know, Dutch football. And there's probably a role or a company or something that hasn't been thought of blending those two together. And I think it's an amazing time just in the world of sport, from tech to innovation, to the blending of the pro sports world, to broadcast, to product world, to Amazons of the world. You know, all these companies are blending together and becoming one ecosystem. And I think if you can kind of find your passion, that might be a little quirky or a little bit weird, you'll be able to make a career out of it. Where 20 years ago, you know, you probably had to slot yourself into more of a mainstream passion.
Carl, I think that was a brilliant answer, and I don't think I could answer and ask another question that wouldn't sound trite after that. I think that was brilliant. I think that's a perfect place to end. So I cannot thank you enough. This the insight you've provided into working globally and just in this sports marketing niche, and I love what you had to say about working endemic to with one of the brands that are just really in the sport versus one of the peripheral brands. And I just think the advice you're sharing in here is so great for our audience, and I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, and I just want to say you're welcome, and Brian, I think you're doing a great job. I love your podcast, and even though I'm a little further along in my career, you know, I think having that first day mentality of I still remember what it was like coming out of university and trying to figure it all out. And I think you're doing a great job. People are always it's always good to be learning, kind of the older you get and taking in just where we're at, because it's an exciting time in sport. Like I said, it's no one has all the answers.
That's for sure. Thank you so much, Carl. This was great. It's funny, when I do these interviews, there's times where I'm taking notes because I want to think of my next question. You know, they'll be answering something and I'll be inspired with a question or a direction I want to head. And I kept doing that. I was taking little notes. But then Carl would say something that just sounded so profound to me. I was trying to scribble them down so quick so I could remember them, these exact quotes, because he just had this really great grasp for what it takes to succeed in sports marketing. I loved his perspective on international experience and working in diversity and so many different angles of marketing and being not afraid to fail and being able to try things. And as a manager, pulling down walls so other people can be creative. There's so much to take away from this, and so much from his experience and attitude we can all get. So I hope you got as much out of this and took as many notes as I did. If you didn't, I force you to go back and listen to it again. I will tell you, after the call was done, Carl and I spoke, and he's like, hey, there's a couple little TED Talks and other videos that I'd love to share with your audience. So I am going to embed those in the show notes of this episode, and I think you should go back and listen to them, because Carl is an inspired guy. You can tell that. He just has an inspiration about him, but I think he also is out there pulling inspiration and creativity from different areas. And these are a couple of videos that inspire him and motivate him. And if it works that way for him, I think it'll work that way for you and for me and for all of us listening. So go check out the show notes and check out those links that Carl wanted me to include. And I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, because I just learned a lot. That's it for this show. I will see you guys on Friday.